I emphatically declare that today's world, more than ever before, longs for just and righteous people with love for all humanity, and above all, longs for the perfect righteous human being and the real Savior who has been promised to all peoples and who will establish justice, peace, and brotherhood on the planet. O Almighty God, all men and women are your creatures, and you have ordained their guidance and salvation. Bestow upon humanity that thirst for justice, the perfect human being promised to all by you, and make us among his followers and among those who strive for his return and his cause.
متشکرم و السلام علیکم و رحمت الله و برکاته.
That's Iran's president, Mahmoud Ahmadinejad. He was speaking at the UN last week, and among his comments there at the very end, he talked about that one perfect human being, and he laid out what sounds to many like an apocalyptic end times vision. Welcome to Issues Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. Here in the first hour of Monday's program today, we're going to be talking with Dr. Serge Trifkovic about the Iranian president's final comments there and the general tenor of his entire address to the UN General Assembly. We'll also talk with Sergey about the rally yesterday in favor of a Lebanese Christian leader who is critical, openly and publicly critical of Hezbollah. And then finally, in this half hour, we'll take up the subject with Sergey on Pope Benedict and his comments on Islam and the unfolding dialogue that is now part of the Pope's permanent agenda with Islam. That's the first half hour of Issues Etc. In the second half hour, we start audio open lines. We're going to be all over the map, but there are a few themes that we will play out in the course of that time in audio open lines. At 5 o'clock in the third hour of the program, Dr. Uwe Simonetto joins us here in the studio. Venezuela's President Hugo Chavez, of course, made some startling comments at the UN, too. He called the President of the United States the devil, not once, twice, but I think about seven times. And we'll find out what Dr. Uwe Simonetto thinks about that the last half hour of the program. Since Ramadan has begun, let's answer the question, what is Ramadan? Dr. Alvin Schmidt of Illinois College will be our guest in the last half hour to answer that question. Our call-in numbers here this Monday, it's the 25th of September, 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Serge Trifkovic is a regular guest here on the program. He's foreign affairs editor for Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, and director of the Rockford Institute Center for International Affairs. Serge, welcome back.
Good to be with you again.
What is the end times vision of Mahmoud Ahmadinejad?
I don't want to bore your listeners with the details of Shiite theology, but we really have to explain the concept of the perfect human being in some detail if you're to understand what he's talking about. In the Shia version of early Islamic history, the first three successors of Prophet Muhammad, Abu Bakr, Uthman, and Umar, were illegitimate. And they claimed that Muhammad had appointed Ali, who was his cousin and his son-in-law, as the legal and anointed successor both in the spiritual and in the secular sphere, because, of course, Muhammad had combined both, and that the heirs to Ali were then forced by the corrupt rulers of Damascus, which held the caliphate at that time. They were not recognized as legitimate, and, of course, Ali's younger son, Hussein, was ultimately killed by Muawiyah, the caliph of Damascus, and his son Yazd. Now, to the Shiites, this was, of course, the beginning of the major schism, and subsequently all of the Sunni mainstream Muslims, in their view, were victims of a grave error and of both theological and secular error, both in terms of social organization and in terms of understanding of the succession to the caliphate. In their view, and in the Shiite tradition. After Ali, there had been 11 legitimate successors to the prophets, imams, and they, of course, have historic or quasi-historical details on all of them, but things really get seriously interesting with the death of the 10th of those, whose name was Hasan al-Askari, and who left no male heir. Now, the Shiites claim that, in fact, he did have a son, Abul Qasim Muhammad, the name, incidentally, the same as that of Prophet Muhammad himself, who, known simply as al-Mahdi, and he's supposedly the 12th imam who has been in hiding for, what, over 1,100 years now. But he's kept miraculously alive by Allah in a cave. And he will come back. The Shiites constantly expect this to happen. And Ahmadinejad believed that his return is imminent. And he will usher in a period of perfect rule, and he will herald the end times. Now, the believers in this tradition are known as Itna Ashari, i.e. Twelver, or Imami Shiites. And their sect is generally regarded as synonymous with Shiite Islam as a whole. Now, in terms of Shiite world outlook and Shiite cosmology, the absence of this hidden imam from the world is a big tragedy. It really means that the world is imperfect, that it is inherently flawed. For as long as he does not come back, there will be strife, there will be falsehood, and humanity is in constant need of his redeeming powers, even that part of humanity which still belongs to Dar al-Harb. In other words, once he returns, the rest of the world will submit to Islam. It will be impossible for the world to be reconciled to the Creator and for disbelief to still exist. So there is also an implied threat, if you will, in Ahmadinejad's vision, in that it is not possible for a faithful Muslim to expect the return of this perfect human being and at the same time not to be cooperative with the divine projects of converting the world to Dar al-Islam.
Does Ahmadinejad, does he consider himself to be a religious leader? Or, as he portrayed himself there at the UN, almost a secular leader, even though it's a hard case for him to make being the president of Iran?
Well, the boundary is, of course, totally blurred, both in traditional Islam historically and in today's Iran politically, because no candidate can stand in any of Iran's election unless he is approved by the religious authorities. So it would be impossible by definition for someone who does not believe in the blending of the mosque and the state to be a candidate. As someone who believes in the secular concept of democracy, of course, is excluded by definition, because democracy assumes popular sovereignty, and Islam assumes sovereignty by Allah and by his anointed representatives in this world. So I don't think that Ahmadinejad and his supporters would even see any kind of discrepancy, because of course, he's both. He's a believer, and he's the leader of the state that wants to see that vision put in place. Now, what is interesting is that his statement was accompanied by such audible applause, because if you look at it in some detail, it is obvious that only someone who is not only a Muslim, but furthermore a Shiite Muslim who believes in the hidden imam and his imminent return could possibly greet Ahmadinejad's words with enthusiasm.
And very briefly, a final question on the Iranian president's address to the UN. What was the general tone? How should we understand his address there?
He's obviously a skillful manipulator of the public opinion, not only in his own country, but also throughout the Muslim world. I think he is now busy primarily projecting himself as a pan-Islamic leader. And in this, he is scoring some successes, primarily because of Iran's support for Hezbollah in Lebanon, which, of course, has scored him many brownie points in the Arab street, even in those areas that are traditionally Sunni. And also, I think some of his rhetoric will appeal to third world dispossessed in general, anyone who feels that, it's time we had someone to stand up to the West in general and the United States in particular. What is also interesting is that with his statement, he has already thrown another gauntlet to those who want to curtail Iran's nuclear program, and I think that it will become increasingly difficult to do anything effective because, to all intents and purposes, he's the guy who holds many trump cards. The unstated one is the ability to make Iraq effectively ungovernable if he wanted to.
We're talking with Dr. Serge Trifkovic, foreign affairs editor of Four Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, and director of Rockford's Institute's Center for International Affairs. On the, on one of the big front pages of the World section in the St. Louis Post-Dispatch today, the headline reads, "Lebanese Christian leader rallies thousands in assailing Hezbollah." What's the story here?
Frankly, I think there is a little less than meets the eye. First of all, the leader in question is Samir Jaja, who is one of the few leaders of Lebanon's warring factions from the time of the Civil War, who actually spent many years in prison for, he would say, alleged war crimes, primarily connected to Sabra and Shatila. In fact, the most popular Christian leader in today's Lebanon is probably General Michel Aoun, the former commander of the Lebanese army, who is very friendly to Hezbollah. We have to understand several things in this context. One, that the diehard Christian militia types have lost the war. I'm talking about the Lebanese civil war that ended with the Syrian intervention and the exodus of a very large segment of the Christian population of Lebanon. They lost because they lost political power and they lost a large share of the population. Just how large, nobody knows. Believe it or not, the last census in Lebanon harks back to 1932 and the French mandate under the League of Nations. At that time, Lebanon had 55% Christians and 45% Muslims, but because of the discrepancy in the birth rates, it is reckoned that already during or shortly after World War II, the balance had shifted in favor of the Muslims. But nevertheless, the political arrangements whereby the president of the country is usually or almost invariably a Christian and the prime minister is a Muslim has remained in place. Nowadays, most independent observers believe that the ratio is more like 70 to 30 in favor of different types of Muslims, and at best 65 to 35. What is interesting is that within the Muslim camp, the Shiites, the poorest segment of the Muslim population and Lebanon's population as a whole, are now in the absolute majority in the Muslim camp, and they have the plurality in Lebanon as a whole, estimated at around 40%. And as far as the Christians go, Maronite Christians, who are Eastern Rite Catholics, account for about a fifth, maybe 5 to 6% are Eastern Orthodox, the Patriarchate of Damascus, Antiochian Church, and another 10% or so may belong to various other denominations, including Greek Orthodox, Greek Catholic, Armenians, and so on. Among all of these different denominations and sects, General Jaja represents northern Lebanese Maronites, and again, I insist, a small section of them who would like to turn the tables and, if you will, put the clock back on what was, for the Lebanese Christians, objectively the dreadful decade of the 1980s. But alas, they have no wherewithal to pull it off, because the alliance with Israel that Zsa and people like the leader of the Lebanese Christian Southern Lebanese Army do not have any longer, and such an alliance would be very difficult to revive in view of the animus which the Israelis spread among Lebanese Christians by more or less indiscriminate attack on all communities and targets all over the country during the July-August campaign. What options the Christians have right now? Well, on the one hand, they have to be careful not to alienate the Shiites too much, for the simple reason that the Shiites hold all the trump cards. They have a massive wave of not only popular support, but also money, because the Iranians are giving them extensive funds for reconstruction of Lebanon. They have a damaged, but anything but destroyed militia, the Hezbollah, that enjoys the support of the Arab world in addition to Iran. And they also have no possibility of receiving direct aid from the Israelis, and the role of the Syrians is ambivalent in the extreme. The Syrians have been helping Hezbollah get supplies, and they certainly would be most reluctant to shift alliances at a time when they're still under very heavy pressure from Washington. For a well-meaning outsider who would like to see this remnant of Christianity survive in the Middle East, in the Levant, I think the optimal strategy would be to lie low and to wait for what I anticipate will develop between different Islamic communities in Lebanon and in the greater Middle East, which is the inevitable clash between Ahmadinejad and his proxies on the one side, and the conservative and secular Arab regimes, which do not cherish the sight of an extensive Shiite domain spreading out of Iran all the way to the Mediterranean on one side and across the Persian Gulf into the Arabian Peninsula on the other.
Should Western observers, in particular, I'm thinking here about the Christian Zionist element here in the United States, take the opposition of General Jajad's his stated opposition to Hezbollah as a vote for Israel? Is the general pro-Israel just because he's against Hezbollah in Lebanon?
Well, that would seem to be a reasonable conclusion, but let me reiterate, it would be an extremely dangerous position for the Lebanese Christians to take at a time when their numbers have already dwindled to perhaps not more than, and probably less than, a third of Lebanon's population, when they no longer have direct channels of physical communication with Israel, and at a time when both politically and materially their potential enemies have the upper hand. So being excited about Samir Jaja and then seeing yet another wave of exodus of Lebanese Christians into Western Europe and North and South America would be a rather melancholy conclusion of the proceedings. And in particular, I think Jaja's claim that the Resolution 1701 was a victory for the Christian community is smacks of either desperation or of serious misperception of reality.
How do you explain Christian Zionists in the United States who seem to care more about Jews in Israel than Christians in Lebanon?
Well, because ultimately they also care more about their peculiar vision of the end times than about what a Christian living should be all about, which is to seek a good life. I think that the excessive focus of any denomination on any particular aspect of what should be the totality of world outlook and living smacks not only of heresy, but also of poor theology and poor morals.
Finally, your thoughts on Pope Benedict's comments regarding Islam and the fallout that continues to be one of the top stories in the news, Sergio, with about 2 minutes here.
First of all, what the Pope had to say in Regensburg was primarily directed against the secular establishment of the West, the dominant class in the Western world, And if you read carefully his speech as a whole, it is a warning that there can be no reason without faith, and there can be no faith without reason. The notorious quote of the Byzantine emperor, quite apart from the fact that it is correct, was simply used as an illustration of the discrepancy between between God's plan for the world, and that cannot include violence, because violence would be in opposition to reason, and no plan of divine character could possibly be unreasonable. That's why I think that the secular establishment in the Western world has so gleefully criticized the Pope, and especially if you read the editorial in the New York Times of, I believe, the 16th, certainly about a week ago, you will encounter the kind of animus that that contains a touch of schadenfreude, as if they enjoy attacking the Pope for his lack of savoir-faire, for his lack of tact and sense. Ultimately, I think that it's a pity that a thoughtful and a very interesting discourse by the Pope has been overshadowed by very crude gut reactions from the Muslim world, and by, as I say, a reaction of the secular liberal establishment in our media, which does no justice to a very serious issue, which is how to reconcile faith and reason in the age of post-Christian, post-national, post-industrial technology. And I think that, as far as the Muslims are concerned, yet another episode of killing in the name of disproving their violent intent and disproving the validity of the accusation that they are violent speaks for itself. But I believe that, at the very least, Pope Benedict will be remembered, quite apart from these ridiculous apologies and insistence on the dialogue, will be remembered as someone who has reminded us in the early 21st century that the old dilemma which St. Thomas Aquinas had tried to resolve, and the patristic fathers before him, is still very much with us, as much so as 15 or almost 20 centuries ago.
Folks, you can read Sergei Trifkovic's columns on the web, including his latest titled An End Timer on the East River, The Hidden Message of Ahmadinejad's UN Speech, at chroniclesmagazine.org, chroniclesmagazine.org. Serge is foreign affairs editor for Chronicles, a magazine of American culture, director of the Rockford Institute Center for International Affairs, and author of the book Defeating Jihad. Serge, thank you again for being our guest.
My pleasure, as always. All the best.
Well, for the next 90 minutes of the program, we've got audio open lines. We're going to pick up on some of the themes that were raised here in our conversation with Dr. Trifkovic. We're going to begin with the CNN story titled Vatican on High Alert. Vatican always is a place of pretty tight security. The popes had, well, several popes have had attempts on their lives made, but apparently there are real open threats on this pope. Audio open lines follows after this break.
Talk radio for the thinking Christian. You're listening to Issues, Etc. Do you sometimes struggle to find time for personal devotions? What if you could study God's Word while driving your car, doing the dishes, or surfing the web? Our Issues, Etc. book of the month for September is called Listening to Luther. It's a CD and a booklet of Luther's small catechism and six hymns written by Martin Luther. You can find out more about Listening to Luther on our website, issuesetc.org, or by calling Concordia Publishing House, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. You'll probably recognize the voice of Listening to Luther. It's Issues Etc. regular guest, Dr. Ken Sherb. Listening to Luther costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. You'll find a brief, clear study of God's Word on the essentials of the Christian faith with Listening to Luther. This devotional resource costs $14.99 plus shipping and handling. Listening to Luther, 1-800-325-3040 or issuesetc.org.
For most medical procedures, patients are encouraged to gather a variety of opinions and all the information they can. But there is an exception.
This is a special commentary from the Susan B. Anthony List, named for the suffragette who was proudly pro-life.
Abortion, sadly, is one of the most common medical procedures in the country. In states that require a woman who is contemplating abortion to receive accurate information about the procedure and its risks, it is said that the rate of abortion is reduced by almost one-third. If we all want to reduce the number of abortions, providing complete and accurate information is the best way. But abortion advocates vehemently oppose such measures.
Are you pro-life? Then visit our website at sba-list.org and discover how you can make a difference. I'm Marjorie Dannenfelser, president of the Susan B. Anthony List. Thanks for taking a stand.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, where values thrive, and online at thrivent.com.
Welcome to the Meyer Minute. Happy birthday, Caesar Augustus.
Who?
The first century BC saw civil war throughout the Mediterranean world. Caesar Augustus established himself as emperor and ruled from 27 BC until his death in 14 AD. The historian Tacitus wrote, "When the world was wearied by civil strife, he subjected it to empire under the title prince." His birthday, September 23rd, that was Saturday, was celebrated throughout the Mediterranean world with parades, sacrifices for his welfare, dramas, and a general carnival atmosphere. Augustus, of course, was no Christian, dying when Jesus was just a teenager. He was kind toward the Jews throughout his empire, part of his policy of kindness toward all subjugated peoples. Because he put in place the Pax Romana, the Roman peace, a sect of the Jews, the Christians, was able to practice their beliefs and grow rapidly in numbers. God works that way, using world leaders who do not acknowledge him to serve the people who do. So Paul wrote in 1 Timothy 2, "I urge that requests, prayers, intercession, and thanksgivings be made for everyone, for kings and all those in authority, that we may live peaceful and quiet lives in all godliness and holiness." So a belated happy birthday, Augustus, wherever you are, and we are reminded to pray for our leaders.
This presentation of the Meyer Minute on AM 850 KFUO is underwritten by Thrivent Financial, online at thrivent.com. We do more than work. We work with a purpose.
Equipping the priesthood of all believers. You are listening to Issues, Etc.
Welcome back to Issues, Etc. I'm Todd Wilkin. For the next 90 minutes of the program, we've got audio open lines for your questions and your comments. A number of places to go. It's all kind of connected in a strange way. We're going to start out with a CNN story titled "Vatican on High Alert." That's about, well, we just mentioned this with Sergio. The Pope has always been surrounded by a cadre of security. Now the security is even higher. A former attempted assassin on Pope John Paul II has written a letter to Benedict XVI saying, "Don't go to Turkey. People will try and kill you." And he's called for the Pope to step down. That's unlikely to happen. ABC News has a report on a religious summit that the Pope held with, well, I don't think that they were religious leaders from Islam. They were religious diplomats or diplomats from Islamic countries, which is a very different thing. We'll hear about that. Cat Stevens, who, you know, big 1970s star, singer, weighs in on Pope Benedict's comments on Islam. Why is it significant? Well, Cat Stevens is no longer Cat Stevens. He goes by his new Islamic name. He converted some time ago to Islam. Jerry Falwell made some recent remarks about Hillary Clinton. He likened her to Lucifer. There's an interview with Jack Danforth, former senator, from PBS Religion and Ethics News Weekly. We'll play that for you in its entirety, stop and started. And as time permits, we'll also get to CBS News on evangelical politics and an update on that church out there in California that was being investigated by the Internal Revenue Service because they were politicking for parties and candidates. This is a church that's on the religious left. They made some anti-war statements and a couple other things right around the time of the election. they're going to fight the investigation, fight the charges against them, try to keep their tax-exempt status. We'll bring you an update on that during Audio Open Lines. Now, you can join us. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. You can also email us here in the studio, issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I don't know where my Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September went. Did we give it away when we were in Chicago? We didn't? Then it never made it back from Chicago? Someone in Chicago is listening to Luther. I don't know if someone walked off with it. Maybe. All I know is I took it to Chicago. Jeff said, let's give one of these away. And the next thing I knew, I didn't have my Issues Etc. Book of the Month for September listening to Luther. It's actually an audio CD, which explains why someone could just pick it up and walk away. Or maybe Jeff gave it away and simply forgot about it. It's an audio CD of Luther's Small Catechism. It's narrated by a regular guest here on the program, Dr. Ken Sherb. For more information on it, I can't show it to you. I can't even put my hands on it anymore. If you want to find out about it, you can see it at our website, issuesetc.org, or you can also call Concordia Publishing House any weekday during regular business hours, and they'll be able to tell you all about it. It's called Listening to Luther. Their number, 1-800-325-3040. 1-800-325-3040. Well, we begin Audio Open Lines with a CNN report titled Vatican on High Alert. Here's the full story from CNN.
The normally peaceful Vatican is on high alert. Adding to that tension, a letter sent by Mehmet Aliachka, who shot the previous Pope, John Paul II, in 1981, to the Italian newspaper La Repubblica. He wrote, Pope Ratzinger, listen to someone who knows these things very well. Your life is in danger. You absolutely must not come to Turkey. Aliashka claims he's been in contact with both Vatican and Western intelligence services, though he offered no evidence. Then he goes on to ask the Pope to step down, writing, For your own welfare, you must make a grand gesture of honor and resign. Then you must return to your native land, and in your place, an Italian cardinal can be elected Pope. Aliachka was freed from an Italian prison in 2000 and is now serving time in a prison in Istanbul. Around the world, some Muslim leaders have accepted the Pope's apology, but others remain angry. In Pakistan, this cleric and about 1,000 others demanded his removal. One of Italy's top Islamic spokesmen is calling for calm. Let's hope that with dialogue we can manage to overcome this difficult moment to calm down the spirits and quench down the tension. Not surprisingly, the faithful visiting St. Peter's Square are supporting their spiritual leader.
He apologized for what he said, but mostly it sounds to me like it was a misinterpreted because the Pope don't have a bad bone in his body, you know what I mean? He's so pure and beautiful, so nothing was meant. It's like anything in the world, people misinterpret and translate things the way they want.
One Vatican expert agrees.
I really believe he thought that that academic audience would take it in that spirit, and to be honest, they did. I mean, the people who attended that lecture, you know, didn't walk out thinking, we have just seen a historic, you know, poke in the eye at Islam from the Pope. It took, you know, 24 hours for that one phrase lifted out of context to make its way around the world.
Delia Gallagher, CNN, Rome.
All right, there's the story from CNN. Here's the big question in my mind. Should the Pope attempt to go to Turkey? He had planned to go to Turkey. When the Pope plans to go someplace, it's like the president planning to go someplace. That's the kind of preparation, that's the kind of advance work that needs to take place. He's a world leader. He is also the leader of 1 billion Catholics worldwide. He always has security issues. So for him to say, well, yes, I'm going to go, or no, I'm not going to go, is a huge decision, probably not in his hands entirely. However, should he go? Think about this scenario. There are two ways of looking at it. Both of them equally plausible. One, since Turkey is viewed by many in the world of Islam as unfaithful, that is, it's secularized, it is at least technically a democracy, something that most Muslims, non-Western Muslims, consider to be incompatible with their worldview. For the Pope to visit there might send the impression that he's willing to deal with moderate Muslims, but not with them. So he doesn't win that way. Or he goes to Turkey, in any event, his life is going to be in danger, most certainly. And it's viewed as an attempt to deal with Islam. And he simply aggravates a situation that's already pretty aggravated by itself. Should he go? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. It's audio open lines. Some of your reaction to the Pope's ongoing concerns. It's interesting that the former would-be assassin of Pope John Paul II has asked for the Pope to resign. I think that's the first official call or first call from anyone publicly for the Pope to step down over these issues. Does that even, I mean, let's say it doesn't go away. Would that be a solution to the problem? 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Well, on his side, the Pope is calling for some more religious dialogue between Christians and Muslims. It takes an odd form. Listen to this story from ABC News on this religious summit of sorts held by Pope Benedict XVI.
Pope Benedict is now calling for more open dialogue between religions, and ABC's David Wright joins us with more from the Pope's summer home in Italy. Good morning, David.
Good morning, Chris. It was the briefest of meetings here at the Pope's Summer Palace. About 21 Muslim ambassadors plus representatives from the Arab League were here for a special private audience with the Pope. The Pope reiterated his deep respect for Islam and said that the world situation being what it is, dialogue between Christians and Muslims is imperative in his view. He also took care to stress religious freedom, which has been a bone of contention for Christian worshippers in many Muslim countries. Interestingly, this wasn't much of a dialogue. The Pope read them a speech, then met with them individually, but the ambassadors, at least collectively, did not have an opportunity to talk to him.
Now, I don't know if I'd call that a religious summit or not. These are ambassadors from various Muslim countries. They're gathered by the Pope. It sounds like another attempt for the Pope to say, okay, let's just smooth things over here. When it comes to my whole view of Islam, I don't have any trouble with you guys. From what I saw in the video, the Muslim ambassadors seem to be behaving quite respectfully toward the Pope. Now, that's not, maybe that's the beginning of dialogue. That's not dialogue itself. What kind of a dialogue could there be here? To what end should this dialogue take place? I just want you to think again about that question that always comes up here whenever we're talking about Islam. What is the real Islam? If the Pope sits down and has real interreligious dialogue. That is, let me tell you about myself and what I believe, and then I'll listen to what you have to say about yourself and what you believe with Muslim leaders. Which Muslim leaders does he choose? To have an open and frank dialogue with the Muslim world, should he sit down with, say, Iran's president or one of the top imams in Iran? Does he sit down with a Shiite or with a Sunni? Does he sit down with Western Muslims who are altogether happy to talk to the Pope and probably, many of them, not so much offended by what the Pope had to say? Or does he sit down with those who were most deeply offended? It all comes back to that question. I'm sure they're scratching their heads at the Vatican. What is the real Islam? Is it represented by the Shiite minority, the Sunni majority? You know, you talk to one of them, you're going to make the other ones mad. And then once you get them around the table, if you can, what do you say? Last week, the Pope said, well, we all worship one God. Muslims and Christians worship the one God. You know, you might upset Muslims by saying that. You wouldn't upset Western Muslims, but you certainly would upset those Muslims, the majority, who don't believe they worship the same God as Christians. It would certainly upset Christians, at least those few of us who still believe that Christians worship the true God exclusively. Phone lines are wide open for you. It's Monday, September the 25th, and it's audio open lines. Our call-in numbers are 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. That in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org, issuesetc@kfuo.org. LCMS World Relief underwrites issues, etc. And, in fact, this weekend I was talking to someone who works with Pastor Matt Harrison over at LCMS World Relief. He was someone who works in their accounting department. I said, man, you really must have had a job since 9/11, Katrina, the tsunamis. And he shook his head. Yes, it's been an interesting several years for LCMS World Relief. There has been no lack of things to do and no lack of ways to wisely use this relief dollar. You know that 95% of the relief dollars given through LCMS World Relief get to the victims of these tragedies. To find out more, go to our website, issuesetc.org, and look for the logo of LCMS World Relief right there, issuesetc.org, or give them a call toll-free and earmark a donation for any of their many efforts around the world, 1-888-930-4438, 1-888-930-4438. So already, we actually have another Pope story here to play for you about Cat Stevens, who's weighed in on Pope Benedict's comments on Islam. But I want to know from you, is the Pope making it worse or is he making it better? If he sits down with Muslim leaders, what is he going to say to them? Who should he sit down with? It's an easy thing. He could just come over here to the United States and sit down with the representatives of CARE. And they'd all kiss and hug and have a big love fest and he'd go home. But would he have had real dialogue with real Islam? 505-7850 or 1-800-730-2727. That in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. In about an hour here on Issues Etc., in hour three, Dr. Uwe Simonetto is going to be our guest. He joins us to talk about Venezuela President Hugo Chavez. He called President Bush the devil several times when he was speaking to the UN. Uwe's got some thoughts on it. Dr. Alvin Schmidt joins us in the last half hour. He'll explain what Ramadan is, and now that it's begun, what it's all about in the last half hour of Issues Etc. Let's go to the phones. We'll talk first with Arthur, who's calling from Jennings. Arthur, welcome to Issues Etc.
Good afternoon.
Hi.
I've been listening to what you're talking about, the Pope and the Muslims and the apology and so forth. While it's interesting, we got something much more important, much closer to home, and that's the stem cell research business. And where can I get in touch with the people that are putting on seminars and talks in regards to this and to local churches?
All right, Arthur, thank you. It's a good question. Now, as certainly we are talking about the Pope here, and it's an important story, and no less important, of course, is that story about embryonic stem cell research and Amendment 2 coming up in Missouri, which we have been talking about a lot here on the program. In fact, last night for our nationally syndicated radio program, we talked with Scott Klusendorf about Amendment 2, about embryonic stem cell research. And for those of you locally, you can hear that again here on Friday when we broadcast that two-hour conversation with Scott Klusendorf. Now, if you want information on the opposition to Amendment 2 and what they are doing and where you can go and find out more, go to nocloning.org. It's the website address for Missourians Against Human Cloning. Nocloning, all one word, .org. And here's their number. It's area code 636-536-9877. Area code 636-536-9877. Missourians Against Human Cloning. Nocloning.org is their website. I think you'll find all the information there, and they are working as hard as they can. In fact, I mentioned to Jeff just last night, I heard the first of their radio commercials over the weekend. If you listen carefully, you'll hear them trying to build up some opposition to Amendment 2. All right, one more story here on the Pope. This is a little more fanciful. Cat Stevens had to weigh in. Cat Stevens, or the singer formerly known as Cat Stevens. That's kind of like the singer formerly known as Prince. The singer formerly known as Cat Stevens, who converted to Islam, changed his name to Yusef Islam. He has chimed in on what Pope Benedict XVI had to say about Islam. Here's the story from AP News.
Yusef Islam, the singer formerly known as Cat Stevens, criticized the Pope on Sunday for the controversial remarks made earlier this month in Germany. In that speech, Pope Benedict quoted words of a Byzantine emperor that characterized some of the teachings of the Prophet Muhammad as evil and inhuman. The singer, who converted to Islam in 1977, said in an interview with the BBC that the Pope's words prove he is not infallible. Islam says the Pope should have looked elsewhere if he wanted to quote, but in his words, we respect the Pope and his position.
Islam made headlines in 2004 after a London to Washington flight he was aboard was diverted to Maine. Islam was on a government watch list and barred from entering the U.S. Rita Foley, The Associated Press.
Oh, Cat Stevens. Cat Stevens, what has become of you? Well, okay, I got to deal with a couple things. Was that him singing in the background? At least he could sing something a little snappier than that. Yusuf Islam is his new name. He converted to Islam. Of course, we did hear about the story of him getting back into the United States after being barred from the United States. He says it proves that the Pope isn't infallible. Let's clear something up, okay? I am no greater proponent of papal infallibility than anyone else who is a critic of it. But strictly speaking, when the Pope, the Roman Catholic Church does not claim infallibility for the Pope in any and all of his utterances or writings. They never have claimed such a thing. To be fair to that claim, what they do claim is that the Pope, when speaking ex cathedra, that is, in his capacity as the vicar of Christ in their terms, and when he speaks officially and promulgates teaching, not just in an academic lecture, not just, you know, when he orders salmon in a restaurant, and then when the dinner's over with, he says, that was the best salmon I've ever eaten, he's not speaking under the cloak of infallibility or under the mantle of infallibility. There are a very limited number of circumstances in which the Pope claims this, and the Church claims for the Pope this infallibility. So for those who have said, and I've heard this in other contexts over the weekend too, who say, well, there you go, there's your proof that the Pope isn't infallible, it's the situation does not pertain to his infallibility. If you want to look for proof that the Pope is not infallible, you look at the doctrines that the papal office has promulgated under the mantle of infallibility. There's enough evidence there for a lack of papal infallibility without going to the Pope's comments on Islam. So we've had about a week to soak this in. I want to hear from you on what's transpired since Pope Benedict made his remark in Regensburg on Islam. 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Our in-studio email address, issuesetc@kfuo.org. I'm looking at this and I'm saying to myself, a couple things come to mind. One, if Islam isn't, at its heart, a violent ideology, then how does one explain the violent response to someone asserting that Islam is a violent ideology? The big question I had, and I raised this last week, is has anything changed since the 14th century? The comments that were quoted by the Pope were from a Byzantine emperor who was facing the threat of Islam on his borders. And he said, look, Islam is violent and it promulgates itself by the sword. That's because he could look off in the distance of his battle lines and see Islamic swords flashing in the sun. Now, people say, maybe that was then and this is now. Has anything changed since the 14th century? In particular, has Islam changed? I know what did change shortly afterwards for that Byzantine emperor. You know what changed? The religion of his city. It went from being the center of Eastern Christianity, called Constantinople, Constantine's city, to the center of the Islamic Empire. They conquered the city. The great Hagia Sophia, a holy wisdom church there, one of the most unbelievable churches in the world, also one of the most ancient, became a mosque. They put up the minarets and the towers, and it became a mosque. It is a mosque to this day. And the city, once called Constantinople, is now called by various names, but was called after the conquest, Istanbul, which is just a bastardization of Constantinople. You can see the similarity. Constantinople, Istanbul. So for that 14th century emperor, when he said there is a threat of violence from Islam, there was. Has anything changed? Is Islam the religion of peace? Cat Stevens says, hey, Look at our religion. He converted to it. Look at our religion. For the Pope to say that Islam is not a religion of peace proves he isn't infallible. It proves that there, and but I might say the reaction to the Pope's assertion, whether the Pope is right or wrong, seems to prove that the Pope was right. Not infallible, but right, when he quoted this 14th century Byzantine emperor. That emperor said, "Watch out, folks. Islam is not a religion of peace." The Pope, speaking now in the 21st century, where Islam threatens in a different way, says, "Folks, let's watch out, because Islam has proven over the course of its history to not always have the goals of peace in mind." Someone might say, it's responsible. Is he simply being responsible in warning us? Our in-studio email address is issuesetc@kfuo.org. Our call-in number, 505-7850, 1-800-730-2727. Bob, who called from his car, said the Pope is bowing down to the radical Muslims, but won't bow down to the gospel. That's my viewpoint. Well, yes, he does seem a bit more concerned at this point at making peace with the Muslims than bringing the peace that at least his church claims he has to give, the peace of Christ. The question really here, if you think about it objectively, isn't whether or not Islam has been violent in the past. That's a matter of history. Anyone who would say Islam has not been violent in the past is not paying attention to history. Oh, and by the way, the same can be said of Christendom, not the church, but Christendom, that pale of Christianity over Western civilization. Has it been violent in the past? You bet it has. The Pope used to have his own armies and his own territories. The question is not whether Christianity or Islam have been violent in the past. The question is, are they inherently violent? Is violence part and parcel of what it means to be a Christian? Well, Alvin Schmidt, who's going to join us in the last half hour, says, no, when Christians acted in violence in the past, they were acting against the principles and the heart of Christianity. That's the only question I think is worth asking about Islam. Maybe the Pope's getting close to an answer. Is when Muslims act in violence, are they acting against or in concert with the teachings and the principles and the very heart of Islam? That's the question we need to know. Now, when we come back from this break, we're going to be talking more with you during Audio Open Lines. Jerry Falwell, always good for a sound bite, had a few things to say about Senator Hillary Clinton. He likened her to Lucifer, or he said she's going to be just as good for the Republicans in 2008 if she runs. We'll have that after this. Come on, the peace train. This peace train will hold me rolling. Everyone jump up on the peace train.
Defending the faith, teaching the truth. You're listening to Issues Etc.